You're listening to A Light at the Other Side, where we're sharing stories of resilience, healing, and hope. We share the experiences of adoptees, domestic violence survivors, military veterans, and more, so some episodes may contain potentially triggering accounts of trauma. To fully appreciate the light, we must sometimes peer into the dark. On today's episode, I'm going to be addressing parenting. It's the hardest thing you'll ever do, but if done well, can reap great rewards. It's not personal. It just is what it is. Confronting ego, taking accountability, and parenting in a society of broken people. Some people really don't like what I write. Some people say I sound pompous or like I believe I'm better than them. Some ask if I think I'm just so perfect. Some ask why I write things that are better left in the past. I don't exactly mind these questions and comments. Every opportunity to reflect on my ego, my actions, and my words is an opportunity for growth. But more and more, I see that I'm not the problem. I'm just putting words to things some people don't want to talk about. I write a lot about my family, about parenting decisions I've made, about the way I dove headfirst into healing, self-examination, deconstructing everything I learned about parenting, life, and putting things back together in a way that made sense to me and seemed to benefit my children. In doing so, I learned a lot, and to me, the concept of having a village to raise children means sharing these lessons with others. But we're not operating in a very receptive culture. We're operating in a culture of ego. Where I come from, Appalachia, there's a saying, a hit dog hollers. Similar to if the shoe fits, it merely means that if you have some kind of emotional reaction to what someone is saying, you need to examine why. Do you feel triggered? Do you feel defensive? Do you feel like you're being attacked personally when someone mentions some non-specific behavior or action? Same. I hear you. I had a therapist once who was awesome. She was very blunt and real with me. When she would mention something that made me immediately become flustered and defensive, she said, "Whoa, stop. Stop defending and stop getting upset. Sit with this feeling for a minute. Why are you feeling so defensive about what I said?" Thus began an exercise in which I was tasked with making space in my life to stop when I felt defensive, particularly about my parenting, and ask myself why. Explore the feeling. Explore the root of it. The root was typically pretty easy to pinpoint. A mixture of uncertainty, fear, and shame was usually to blame. Uncertainty because I was parenting in a way that was so different than how I was parented, and honestly different than I'd ever seen modeled in my personal life. Fear that trusting my gut and changing my parenting style was going to mess up my kids. And shame that for so many years, I went on autopilot and parented my children in a way that was more in alignment with conservative evangelical Christianity and frankly was abusive. I spanked. I was authoritarian and expected immediate compliance and obedience from children far before it was developmentally appropriate to do so. In those moments, I could have shrunk into myself and just ignored the whole issue. Just give the kids an iPad or something to occupy them while I hid in my room, scared, ashamed, and in denial. But if I'm not parenting my children, who is? The TV? The internet? YouTube? TikTok? Instagram? Their peers? Some random other adult in their life that has inappropriate intentions with them? My children don't need another friend. They need a parent. They can find friends at school, on the internet, at the skate park. Where can they find another mother? The only choice I have, the only viable option, is to pull up my big girl pants and figure this out. My children didn't ask to be born, and they certainly didn't ask to have me as their mother, a deeply broken, abused, insecure, hesitant mother. For them, I had to put myself back together, heal what I did not break, and find the confidence to guide them to adulthood. This doesn't make me better than anyone else. Far from it. It makes me real. It makes me human. Confronting my flawed humanity has never been intended as an attack on anyone else's. We are dealing with a crisis of ego in our society. I say that, but there are quotes from ancient Rome indicating that we've always dealt with crises of ego, so I hardly think it's anything new. The internet and social media, however, have brought the battle front and center in our homes. I was discussing parenting with someone born in the 1940s, and they said parents have always had these challenges with parenting, especially with adolescents. I replied that parenting before the internet was like parenting during a storm when you live in a seaside village. The storm is close, but it's still out there. In the age of the internet, we are parenting with the hurricane inside the house. How do we keep from drowning, much less our children? We have to start by confronting our ego. We, as parents, have to get real about our mental health and what's prohibiting us from being actual parents. Not friends, not roommates, not buddies, because they can find all of those things elsewhere. We were tasked with being their parent, a role singular in their life and ours. It's a heavy responsibility, but also what an honor. What a privilege to walk alongside a burgeoning spirit, a blossoming person, and to share with them the mistakes you made, to spare them the pain of repeating them, to point out the beautiful and breathtaking joy that's out there, and to inspire them to reach for heights beyond our wildest imaginations. Even if that goal is simply a healthy marriage and no divorce, a home with no fighting, a life with no chaos, peace. Nobody in my household is expected to be an astronaut or a neurosurgeon. No one is expected to go to an Ivy League college. Working an honest job to make an honest living, paying your debts, and being a good and kind contributing member of your community are some of the most noble goals there are in this life. But that pesky ego seems to always get in the way. When parents' motto is, "Because I said so," they're speaking from ego. Even a brief explanation of why is sufficient to let your child know you're not just making up rules and expectations as you go, but that there is a deliberate reason for everything you ask of them and everything that is prohibited to them. Just as you would bristle if your boss said, "Because I said so," when you question a strange new company policy, it causes our children to bristle and it builds resentment to not be given the basic respect of explaining the why that comes so naturally to humans. Refusing to go to therapy, refusing to apologize to your children, and refusing to address whatever is happening in your own mental health that prohibits you from parenting, those are all issues of ego. Deconstructing the ego is hard work. It requires a great deal of humility and honesty, which is counter to a lot of what we learn in the American culture. In America, the loudest, most abrasive voice gets the attention. A spirit of humility is no longer a requirement for a political leader. We are not seeking men who are mentally and emotionally healthy, who have examined their egos and come to a balanced position of ethical and moral virtue. We reward the loudest, most abrasive, most shocking, most egocentric individuals, and then complain when they're not good leaders. Imagine that. Our children are watching all of this. They are absorbing what our collective societal morals are. If we are to believe CNN and Fox News, our collective social morals are: lying is fine as long as you win. If you do not win, you can throw a violent tantrum. You can make fun of others for their physical appearance or even their disabilities. Money reigns supreme, and the quest to make and keep money is more important than literally anything else. Our environment is a disposable resource that we can destroy at will. Human beings are merely assets to be used up and disposed of. And people who do not think exactly like us are the enemy to be mocked, scorned, and repressed, even through legislation and federal policy. If you aren't parenting, this is what our culture is raising your child to believe and be. Are you okay with that? If so, carry on. You're not my target audience, and frankly, I don't understand you, and I deeply mourn for your offspring. If you do have a problem with that, the solution lies right in your mirror. You're it, mom or dad. You're it. If you want your child to be a pleasant person to be around in a few years when they're adults and forging their path, if you want their lives to be reasonably comfortable and not fraught with chaos, upheaval, and pain, then you need to act now. This isn't me judging you. This is just me stating the obvious. If you aren't parenting your kids, the world is, and I promise you, the world doesn't give a shit about you or your kid. Instead of bristling when I point out the obvious, take a breath and reflect on why you're bristling. I'm not perfect. That's totally laughable. I'm raising 4 kids that I gave birth to, and they are 4 very different, unique, and vivacious personalities. Nothing about this is easy. But my kids are worth the hard work. Their future lives, partners, and children are worth the hard work. Peering into a distant day when my children are adults who have a deep sense of peace and tranquility in their lives, who are healthy mentally and physically and happy with what life has brought them, that is worth every bit of discomfort. Every time I want to give up and lay in bed, I picture my grandchildren asking me why their dad is so angry all the time or why their mom is distant and detached. It all comes back to rest at my feet. So I get up and I address the challenges of parenting head on. Even when I'm tired, even when I'm soul weary, even when I'm struggling myself, I challenge my ego to step aside and let me be the parent I need to be. Our society is led around by the nose by a collective ego, the ego of politicians and TikTok influencers, celebrities and musicians, news anchors and podcasters. Someone else's ego problem can become yours if you don't watch out. I watched my adopter listen to Rush Limbaugh, and slowly the poison of that man's ego infiltrated the sweet spirit of that Methodist pastor and turned him into something unrecognizable, full of fear and judgment and anger. Ego transference is real, and it's everywhere in our media. Whose ego do you want shaping your kids? Whose ego is guiding your family? Whose ego is going to emerge in your grandkids? Addressing these issues is not popular in our culture today. We live in a decidedly hedonistic society where one's personal happiness reigns supreme and can be prioritized even over their children's health. Look at the current debate and legislation around children being featured on their parents' social media accounts for profit. Talking about ego redirects someone's energy from their happiness and immediate comfort to a place of intentional discomfort. Addressing your demons is uncomfortable. Shadow work is uncomfortable. Therapy is uncomfortable. Talking about our shortcomings and flaws is uncomfortable. I challenge you to get uncomfortable, particularly if you're raising children. In decades past, the influence of society on children was limited to television programs and music, much of which was censored through pretty conservative filters. Back when I was growing up, we had just a few television channels to choose from, many of which aired reruns of Leave It to Beaver or The Andy Griffith Show. White, conservative, Christian morality reigned supreme, which was also problematic in many ways, but we weren't watching naked women twerk at 8 years old. Now children can access the entirety of the world in an instant. Pornography, reality television, and all manner of explicit and debauched material are available instantly, and if you aren't actively parenting, that's what is raising your kids. I've said before that I'm a bit disappointed, more than a bit if I'm being honest, with my generation of parents from what I see from our community, neighborhood, and a lot of my kids' friends' families. Lots of zennial parents are being friends, refusing to guide and teach lest their children not like them. I'm not delusional. I'm aware those type of parents have existed forever. Their absence of leadership with their kids leaves a void. But what exists today to fill that void is so massive, so morally corrupt, and so aggressively invasive that we have to get real about the ramifications of ignoring our children in this culture. The ramifications are record-breaking volumes of diagnoses of anxiety, depression, substance abuse, and suicide. If confronting your ego will save your child's life, would you do it then? I'm sure some of these same critics will blast this as just another self-righteous piece, but I'm hoping that some of these seeds do fall on fertile soil. I'm not here to judge anyone. I've talked about my issues with parenting that took many, many years of overcoming, and I still mess up. However, I tend to believe that a parent working towards self-improvement and altering their parenting patterns is better than one who has thrown in the towel and given up. You can't give up. You're the only parent your kid has. Every day is a chance to start over, a chance to grab a shadow work journal or schedule an appointment with a therapist, to pull yourself up, dust yourself off, and fight the good fight for yourself and your kids. It's okay if your kids see you fall. What's arguably more impactful is that they see you pick yourself up, do the hard work of healing, and move forward in a different and better way, and the entire time prioritize them and their care so they're never left to fend for themselves or figure it out alone. Let's go to battle with ego. Let's individually address this issue so maybe it will have a collective impact as we work towards healing, unity over division, humility over arrogance, temperance and collective good over hedonism and toxic individualism. Don't shoot the messenger. Focus on the message. Our future depends on it. Parenting is a sensitive topic to a lot of people. A lot of us were raised by people who didn't quite get parenting right from our viewpoint. And so as we begin our journey as parents, we take into account everything that was done to us and how our parents have behaved and acted, and we decide what we're going to do with our kids. And for many of us, it means doing something pretty drastically different than how we were raised. And doing so is scary. It's scary to not really have a tradition and routine to fall back on, to constantly be forging a new way. For me, I was raised by people who didn't feel that it was appropriate or warranted or needed to ever admit wrongdoing or apologize to children, but really to anyone. I'm not sure I ever saw, particularly my female adopter, say the words, "I was wrong." Like it just never, it was always someone else's fault for her behavior. And so there was this shifting of blame and this presumption that if she acted out, if she misbehaved, that was your shortcoming. I recall one time in high school, so I went to a very small high school, a very rural high school. There wasn't a lot to do. And one of the most common activities for teenagers to do was to go cruising. And if you're not from a small town, not from somewhere that does this, essentially you get in the car with your friends and you drive down the main drag, main street, or whatever your sort of main drag is, and you turn around at the end. And you go back and you just do this over and over, and you pull over in the parking lots on either end of this cruise strip, and you know, you hop in somebody else's car, somebody hops in your car, and you go for another lap. And it was really harmless to me because there were enough adults around in the vicinity. I mean, we're talking about passing by businesses on Main Street, grocery stores, gas stations. So, you know, we weren't out there drinking or doing anything really inappropriate because all the adults in town were basically watching us. So it was just cruising, listening to music, and hanging out with our friends. So I was doing this and in my friend's car, and as we stop at the end, a couple of boys jump in the car, and one jumps in the front seat, one jumps in the back seat, and we go for another pass. And I think I've mentioned before that my adopters were incredibly conservative and religious. And in a small town like that, especially when you are the preacher's daughter, word gets back to your parents before you even get home. So someone called my parents' house and let them know that there was a boy in the car with us. And when we stopped at the next, you know, cycle of cruising, when we reached the end of the strip, I was sitting in the back seat, and my door came flying open, and my female adopter yanked me out of the car and told me to get in her car. We were going home. And she was livid. She was completely beside herself. I'm not sure if it was because it was boys or because one of the boys was black. Either way, she was maybe one of the angriest times I've ever seen her. And we get in the car, and she immediately says, "You're grounded for 6 months for the transgression of briefly riding in a car in public with a boy. And I'm not sure, I to this day, I'm really not sure where the source of her anger came from, why it elicited that magnitude of a response that she got in her car, drove 15 minutes to where I was to rip me out of the car and, you know, berate me in front of all my friends. And then she immediately says, "You're grounded for 6 months." And we get home and I'm upset, obviously, and I'm crying and I'm apologizing. And I really, even like then I didn't understand. And even now I don't understand the, like, what was such a big deal to her. Anyway, so we get home and so my male adopter starts talking to her and he's like, okay. He's trying to calm her down. You know, she's still like over the top, angry, just raging out. And I said, "She grounded me for 6 months." And he even said, "Okay, that's excessive. Okay, let's talk about it." And she said, "No, I said what I said. And if I go back on that now, she's not going to have any respect for me." And I didn't have any respect for her anyway. So there was no respect to lose. She had been violently abusive to me my entire, since I was adopted at 6 years old. She had the most ridiculous rules and controlling attitude about me in terms of what I wore, what kind of makeup I wore, or really wearing makeup at all was unacceptable. She had so many issues with me that I was keenly aware of from the time I was a very small child, that I never really had respect for her. She didn't have control of herself. She had no control over herself as an adult. She was not a safe adult to me. I couldn't be honest with her. I couldn't speak to her. Everything in our lives revolved around her and keeping her calm and happy and satisfied. That means what we ate for dinner, what everybody dressed like, where we went on vacation. Everything in our lives were modeled around keeping this one person happy, and she was on a hair trigger, and anything would set her off. So even as hard as we tried as children to keep this person happy, we still continually upset her and disappointed her. So by that point, I was 16 at this point. I didn't have respect for her anyway. So it was kind of laughable to me that she said she couldn't go back on this ridiculous punishment that she had issued in a moment of rage because I wouldn't respect her, because I already didn't. But she stuck to it. And I miss my junior prom because of it. And it was enormously frustrating to have to sit at home for 6 months over a transgression that she never really fully explained what I did that was so wrong and why it was that level of wrong. If it was riding in the car with a boy or riding in the car with a black boy, which I tend to think it's the latter that upset her to that degree. So I think about that experience a lot when parenting. And I think about when I'm angry, when I'm really, really angry, like just having found out something that my kid did, finding an empty liquor bottle under his bed, for example, and the feeling that that evoked in me in that moment. And if I could have just issued a punishment at that moment and stuck with it, it would have been a really big mistake. And I could admit that as a parent, that sticking to an egregiously overblown reactionary punishment wouldn't have been appropriate and wouldn't have had the outcomes that I wanted for my son. Because in that moment, if I see a liquor bottle under your bed, my old school upbringing, my old school parenting would say, "Take the door off." Okay. If he's doing this behind a closed door in his bedroom, I'm going to take the door off. That's not the right, depriving him of his privacy is not the right answer. The answer is getting to the root of why this kid is dabbling in alcohol. Why is he drinking? So let's get him into therapy and let's sit down and talk with him and let's, on an ongoing basis, come into his room and talk to him and give him space to talk to us. And it's tough because adolescents don't want to talk naturally to their parents, not about things that are going on in their life that they think we may judge them for or we don't understand or that they may get in trouble for. So having to change my entire idea of what it means to parent, you know, growing up in a conservative evangelical home, parenting is about control. You are trying to, through control, produce the kind of adult that you want to produce. You want them to obviously participate in your religion. So they need to do that. They need to be going to church, going to youth group, going to youth retreats. They need to constantly be reminded that this is the religion that they need to choose, that they need to follow for the rest of their life. So religion is a big part of it. Other things fall under that, the clothing that they have to wear, wearing clothing that's respectable to God, choosing a career path that's respectable to God. Everything in life is sort of focused around controlling these human beings for the outcome of them being the kind of adults that you want them to be. And that's not parenting. That's control. That's manufacturing is what that is. You're trying to manufacture another human being that's what you want. You want to be able to put input in and have life spit out this fully blown adult human being who reflects you. That's what it is, that reflects you, that looks like you, walks like you, talks like you, dresses like you. You want your kid to be everything that you are, and even better, you want them to also achieve things that you didn't achieve. You want them to go to college, you want them to go to graduate school, whatever it is that you didn't achieve, you want your child to go do those things. And that's such a warped and damaging idea of parenting. It really, really is. And it's harmful. And I literally can't count the number of conversations I've had, the number of people I've met, the groups I'm in with thousands and thousands of people who are my age, who have left the church entirely, who have left conservative evangelical communities and families because of that core issue, is that they were being rejected for not being reflections of their parents, like carbon copies of their parents. So if we choose to believe something else spiritually, that's an instant. You're out. I'm not going to speak to you. I can't deal with it. Down to how you live your life. Do you have tattoos? Do you have colored hair? Do you have piercings? Do you have a job in a field that I don't understand? Do you do podcasting as work? Are you a content creator? Are you some sort of creative and your parents don't understand how you make money because it's not a fundamental like 9-to-5 job? So there's a consistent and heavy weight of disapproval because you didn't turn out to be a carbon copy like them. And the amount of broken families right now because of that idea of parenting, the idea that if your kids didn't turn out to be carbon copies of you and everything that you value and are made of, then you have failed as a parent and they have failed as a child. Man, it's just causing so many broken families. It's completely unrealistic. And yet there are just thousands upon thousands. I would wager millions of parents out there right now in their twilight years and just sitting alone and angry because their kids didn't turn out exactly how they wanted them to. And instead of just embracing the people that their children are, they've chosen distance and silence because their egos are leading the charge. They cannot apologize. They cannot admit they ever did a single thing wrong. They cannot see their children as people, as unique and individual people. And because of all that, because their ego is leading their lives, these families are broken. And when I look at that, when I looked at how I was parenting when the kids were younger, I don't want a broken relationship with my children. I don't want my kids to not speak to me anymore. So I had to make the decision as a parent to look at my ego and how my ego was leading the way. When they were little and I asked them to do something and they said, why? And I said, because I said so. And the only reason I said that was because I was in a hurry. I needed them to do it, and I didn't respect them as human beings, and I didn't respect them enough to slow down and take the extra 10 seconds of my day to explain to these little human beings why we were doing what we were doing. It really doesn't take that much extra time to respect your children and to treat your children with respect. And if we're honest as parents, and here's another thing, is admitting our own flaws and our own weaknesses. A lot of the times I was so rushed was because I was managing my time poorly. I needed to get up at 5:30 instead of 6, but I got up at 6. So then I was having to rush around three small children to get ready when the responsible thing for me to do as a parent would be to adjust my time schedule and get up 30 minutes earlier so that I could respect my kids as human beings and the time they needed to get ready. Because if somebody came in my bedroom or your bedroom and immediately began yelling, get up, get dressed, hurry, hurry, get your shoes on, where's your other shoe? We would be flustered, we would be upset, and rightfully so, we would be angry. Like, why are you yelling at me? Chill out. So the way that I raised my older kids when they were younger and I was still operating under the patterns of how I had been parenting were harmful. It wasn't okay. It wasn't okay for me to treat my kids like that. As a parent, I have learned, I have grown, I have apologized to my kids. I continue to apologize to my kids when I act out of my ego and I snap or I respond in a way that isn't nice, for lack of a better word. Another thing is people seem to have this idea that you don't need to be nice to your children, that you can snap at your kids and speak to your kids in a way that you would never speak to a coworker, to someone you pass on the street, just a random stranger, or anyone else in your life. You wouldn't speak to them that way, but for some reason you can speak to your kids that way. That's shitty. That's just a shitty mindset to have, that you can speak to your own children worse than you speak to anyone else in your life. And yet it's so unbelievably common that behind closed doors, you know, when I was growing up, I watched the way my adopters behaved in public and the sort of act they put on. Not sort of, it was definitely an act. They were very saccharine, sweet, soft-spoken in public. And then behind closed doors at home, we got a dragon. We got a completely different person that was loud, that was violent. And I didn't want that for my kids growing up. And unfortunately, my older kids were younger and I was still way, way early on in my journey of fixing myself, I replicated some of those patterns. And I've had to go back and apologize countless times to my kids. And I know that my apology can't take away what they went through in their younger years, as I was that person who was unstable, unpredictable, loud. I can never take that back, but I can address my ego, address where I was then, where I am now, where I want to be in the future. And I can continue to refine who I am as a person. The idea that by the time you're 25, you don't need to continue working on your personality is absurd. And yet we were raised by a lot of people who believe that, that they don't have to reflect on their behavior anymore. They don't have to reflect on who they are. And God forbid they change who they are, the way they speak to people, the way they relate to people. And that's completely absurd and false. If your ego is leading the way, you are harming people around you. It's as simple as that. So if the people around you are important to you, particularly your children, you have to address your ego and the issues that you have with parenting. Parenting is not an easy journey. It's unbelievably difficult. It is the most difficult thing you will ever do in your life. But it's so worth it to do it well. If you don't do anything else well in life, focus on your parenting. Focus on your relationship with your spouse. Those are the most important relationships that will carry you through your life, and you will learn more about yourself through the process of intentionally being a good parent and intentionally being a good spouse than you will learn any other time in life. You won't learn this in college. You won't learn this in high school. You won't learn this in your career, but you will learn through addressing your ego and focusing on your relationships with the people under your roof. You'll learn who you are, and you'll learn what you're made of, and you'll learn that you can fundamentally alter the patterns of your life for a better outcome. I promise you can. You have to focus. You have to be willing to confront your ego and confront the negativity and the darkness that lives within yourself before you can move on. So you address the issues that you have, you identify them, and you begin working on them. And slowly but surely, the light comes in, the darkness goes out. And before you know it, you have a positive, mutually respectful relationship with your kids, with your family. You have much less chaos in the house, much less yelling, much less drama. And you can achieve that. You just have to confront your ego head on. I appreciate you guys tuning in. It's a little bit of a long episode this week. I apologize, but I think this is a very important topic, a very crucial, crucial topic. We look at our national leaders now, and nobody is exhibiting a healthy ego like anywhere. So we have to be that healthy ego in our kids' lives, and we have to point out to them that what they're seeing on a national stage is not healthy. And if you behave the way that these people behave, you're not going to have a really positive or healthy, happy, peaceful life. And so you have to model a happy, healthy, peaceful life for your kids. Confront your ego and get it in check. And your relationships with the people around you will improve. Guaranteed. Guaranteed. So I appreciate you sticking there with me for a longer episode. And I'll see you next week.